What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line.
Woohoo! Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again year after year. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Short Radio. This is the CarCast after USC's 42-28. It's hard to remember.
They missed
the score.
They missed a field goal.
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and SC scored garbage points.
15 of them in the fourth quarter.
Yes. This was on pace to be the second worst home loss in the history of the Coliseum for USC.
Until they scored 15 points, meaningless points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, which I have an opinion about, which we're going to get to. But
yeah.
Let's be honest. This might be the 2021 CarCast for the Stanford game. But let's be real. You've heard this episode many times before, and one you maybe were anticipating. We know a lot of people love the CarCast episodes after USC falters. So here we are. SC falters in a game in which they had a win probability through SP Plus of 94%. And one of us in the preview pod, one of us, not naming names, said there was no football reason for USC to lose this game.
Which is supposed to be the kiss of death. Like, the no football reason thing is...
That person created this, like, signature thing of theirs and then did the weird thing where they didn't follow up with it to make the prediction.
Right.
They chickened out on it.
Yeah.
Despite knowing that that was the sign. There's no football reason. That means you definitely have to go all in. That person did not go all in, and SC did not go all in this game, losing a lot of points. And in typical USC fashion under Clay Helton, it was a game in which I think you can look at this, and again, I recognize that these words sound bizarre. I don't think they just got dominated in this game, which is...
Doesn't that make it worse?
Yes. No, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. That is the point. That, like, I think that when SC loses a game 52-6 to Alabama, and they get just demolished in every aspect of the game.
Or the Notre Dame blowout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can... It's a little bit easier to talk about. But when you have a game like this, in which this reminds me of so much of the Oregon game in 2019, except weirdly better for SC, except even though
Stanford doesn't have Kayvon Thibodeau.
Right. Yeah. Like, and it wasn't three straight interceptions that flows through, but like, this was a game that, you know, should not have gone the way it did, to the extent that it did. In a weird way, it's a lot like the Holiday Bowl, where SC, in the way that this should have gone, the way that the game was going, you lose this game close because your defense wasn't able to make a stop at the end. But the way everything went, everything compounds. SC on three straight drives has the ball go through the fingertips of a receiver. And that's not it's not entirely on the receivers. It's on Keaton Slovis, on the combination of that. And it's on the amalgamation of everything. This was a game in which every little moment that could have been a factor in deciding the game went Stanford's way.
Every team has players drop passes. Every team has players have execution mishaps. Every team has players commit penalties. Every team has those things. Lord knows that Pete Carroll teams had a hell of a lot of penalties.
100%, yeah.
But Pete Carroll teams won and other teams went on to win because they weren't bogged down by all of the other issues that USC is bogged down by.
Yes.
Like, Gary Bryant Jr. dropping that touchdown pass isn't as big of a deal if USC doesn't have a horrendous record in the red zone. Like,
it's your play before and after that dictates those things. The penalties that SC commits, they hurt because they let them hurt them, right? If you weren't banking on those plays, you wouldn't be in a position to where when those plays don't go your way, everything crumbles like a house of cards. And suddenly, you throw a pick six, and it's like the whole world is crumbling in, and Stanford is getting every chunk play that they could, and it looked like the team gave up, and you just got nothing, and you got booze raining down in the Coliseum like we've heard before. And it's the same thing as forever. This was a game in which, again, on a play-by-play basis, SC should have been in it. We know that going into it, they absolutely should have been, but they weren't because they made every little mistake, and every little mistake cost them because they just stacked and stacked like little Jenga pieces on top of each other until it all crumbled.
And that's what happens to USC. That's what happens to this USC program right now, is they do need a certain number of plays to go their way. They need Drake London to boss it out at some point. And Drake London did not have a good game. So if Drake London doesn't have a good game, you're screwed. Well, that's not a great way to run your program. Right. It's not a great way to like cross your fingers and hope that like Drake London does something incredible. You can't always depend on Drake London to do something incredible. You can't always depend on Drake Jackson to do something incredible. And some games you're going to have all of that come together where none of them do any of it. And then that's, you end up with this because you have nothing else to fall back on. Stanford is not a great football team. They will not be this is not a Stanford team that's going to like run the table and be one of those teams that's like, oh, magically they're in contention for the Pac-12 North. That's not what this team is going to be.
I have opinions on that.
Okay, don't fall into that trap, Michael. Don't do it. We've been here long enough. Stanford will be fine. Stanford's going to be able to fall back on David Shaw. But you know what? Tanner McKee is going to come down to earth when he faces a different defense that's not USC on this night. And Stanford's defense is going to give up 40 points on their own to somebody else. Like, this is not a Stanford team that's going to run through the Pac-12 North and be super competitive. They're going to be the typical Stanford team that David Shaw is capable of producing because David Shaw is a competent head coach. And that's basics.
They're going to beat Cal but lose to Oregon State?
Yes, probably.
Sorry, beat Oregon but lose to Oregon State.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they're going to be whatever. Like, this Stanford team is going to be whatever.
Can I just give you my Stanford opinion really quick?
Okay.
Before we get into all the SC stuff that we're inevitably going to say. I think going forward, and hold me to this next year, please. Hold me to it. no longer ever putting stock in anything Stanford does in week one.
In week one, no.
Not because Stanford is just not good in week one.
They aren't.
I think my new perspective is that I think Stanford looks at week one as a preseason game.
That may be the case. It's very dumb of them.
Like, I think it's like a 4D chess thing.
It's very dumb of that. I believe that David Shaw would be playing 4D chess.
Because if you're David Shaw,
if you always have USC in week two,
but on top of that, you know that this is not a playoff team.
Yeah.
So you don't need to.
That's some galaxy brain bullshit. And like, I believe that David Shaw is smart enough to try that crap, but like, it's not smart being a football.
I'm not saying
that Stanford is what Stanford is at the current moment. But like, either way, Stanford
in week, they're playing to lose.
Stanford in week one is always terrible. We know this. Don't pay attention to Stanford in week one. But also, don't write off Stanford because David Shaw is a competent head coach, and give him at least that credit. But sure. also, this is not a great Stanford team. Let's not act like this is a great Stanford team. Let's not act like they had any business being on the field with USC at the Coliseum. Let's not act like any of that is like, is anything short of...
They weren't good enough to the point that SC couldn't have won this game. SC absolutely should have won this game regardless.
Absolutely. And it's on USC. It's just straight up on USC. And it's always on USC. And when I say it's on USC, yes, people, I'm saying it's on Clay Helton because he is USC at this point. Like, there's no getting around it. This is the... How can this not be the breaking point, Michael?
It is, because here's the thing. We talked about going into this season, it was entirely the eye test. And this is why I find it frustrating when people are like, well, how many wins does Clay Helton need to get to survive? Does he need to win the Pac-12 South? Does he need to win the... Like, all those things are sort of irrelevant because it's all about the eye test. You can go 11-1 and not win the conference... And 12-0 ASU wins the conference, and then yes, obviously that you would keep him, right? And then there's the flip side, which is you go 7-5 and win the conference, and then no, like you didn't earn it that way, right? Like there's levels to this.
And yeah, but USC is not, the levels are irrelevant at this point because we're two games in and USC hasn't passed the eye test.
Right, but that's what I'm saying.
The one-and-one record is a fair reflection of what this team is.
No, I'm not talking about the record. What I'm saying is the whole point of this season was to not look at the record and look at the eye test.
Yes.
And here we are. SC needed to pass the eye test, and they're not. And it has nothing to do with the score, because you look at the end of the final score, and it's 42-28, and you're like, well, that wasn't the worst loss in the history of USC football, but yet it nearly was. They were down by 29 points to a team that was a 17-point underdog, and yet Clay Helton continues to roll the dice with Keaton Slovis deep into the fourth quarter, despite having a number two quarterback that's going to be the future of your program and never putting him in for a snap in a game
because
you have a redshirt rule that allows you to do so.
But USC doesn't know how to handle the end of games because they're never in ends of games that aren't competitive, positively or negatively. Sure. So, like, why would I expect Clay Helton to know what the hell to do in that situation when Clay Helton isn't in that situation half the time?
To be fair, SC is in these situations.
Well, they don't often get blown out. It's happened a handful of times, but like it's not often that USC is blown out.
It's happened a few times to Clay Helton. That it's happened a few times to Clay Helton.
Well, there's a reason that he should not be in the job that he's currently in because of those things that have happened in the past. But that's in the past. 2017 happened. 2018 happened. All of that's in the past. In 2021. 6 years into this tenure, and I'm asking you, is this finally the breaking point?
It is.
It has to be the breaking point because it's easy to say you have to pass the eye test, but then USC's 5-0 and they didn't pass the eye test, but they're still 5-0. So a win is a win.
If they were 5-0 and not passing the eye test, they were never going to go 12-0. That's the point.
Right, but it helps when you lose because then you clarify the situation.
Which, okay.
So, quite frankly, I would rather USC lose this game like this than have to go through another...
You know, right? You know.
Because at least you know. At least we, 100%. At least we get to go on Twitter and talk about how USC got their asses handed to them by a not great Stanford team at the Coliseum on a night when you're honoring Sam Cunningham and you're supposed to be proving to everyone that they should have bought their season tickets this year and you need to come back to watch USC games. And the first opportunity that they have, they absolutely crap the bed. And like, that is a comforting thought to know that finally USC, Mike Bone doesn't get to run away from this game. Carol Folt doesn't get to run away from this game. No one can come out of this game going like, well, but at least they got the win. Like, winning ugly is still win. All that bull crap. Like,
right. Yeah.
It's just like there's something really nice about just being able to look at a loss and say, or look at a game and say, you lost big, and you need to own that now. Pack your bags and go home, which you don't agree with me on this. But as far as I'm concerned, there were a lot of tarmac jokes after this. This is not like a fireable offense loss.
Have I ever mentioned how much I hate the tarmac
jokes? I know you hate the tarmac jokes, but there were a lot of them out there from national media, from local media, from fans and all that kind of stuff. And like, as far as I'm concerned, what is the point? What is the point of sending Clay Helton up north to play Washington State? What is the point of bringing him back home to play Oregon State? What is the why are we even going to go through this bullcrap of another 6 weeks of knowing that the end is here because the end has been here for years and no one in power wanted to admit it. So we're just going to, what are we going to do? The next month of our lives is going to be sitting there in this purgatory of extra purgatory on top, knowing that eventually Clay Helton will not have his job, but he's still going to be like, can we Randy Edsel the crap out of this at this point?
Can I'm
going to retire at the end of the season. No, you're gone now. I'm done.
Can I ask you an honest question?
What?
If we wake up tomorrow, we're in the middle of watching the Italian Grand Prix, and we get a text message that Clay Helton has been fired. What changes?
My sanity.
Does it really?
Yes. Because then I don't.
Does it honestly?
Yes. Because then I don't have to have this cloud hanging over my head of like, Clay Helton has 9 lives and he's freaking Rasputin at this point. Like, do you know the story of Rasputin?
I know enough.
They're trying to assassinate him and they poison him and he doesn't die. And they try to like get him to drink himself to death and he doesn't die. And then they shoot him point blank and he still doesn't die. And they shoot him 3 more times and he still doesn't die. And it's like, is this guy going to ever freaking die? I live in a constant state of fear that Clay Helton is going to get out of this and we're going to have to do this whole thing again in 2022. And I don't want to do that. So, yes, would it matter to me that we get a text message on Sunday that says that Clay Helton is no longer USC's head coach? Yes, it would, because then the season will still suck, but at least the nightmare's over. At least then I can go to sleep at night and know that I don't have to put up with this in 2022, because my worst nightmare right now is 2022. Like, just put me out of my damn misery and just move on. Move, because the Coliseum is going to be miserable against Oregon State. It's going to be toxic.
Okay. Is it going to be better if it's Graham Harrell's the head coach?
Yes. Or Mike Jenks or Todd Orlando. I don't give a crap.
So the way I look at it, it's already done. It is done. It's, you lose this game, it's done. That's it. It's over. It's like, I don't think you need to worry. Like, it's over. It's done. It's literally
How
done.
Many times has it been over? Do you remember 2018?
No, I get
Do
that
Do you remember
point.
2019?
I get that point. But at this point, the contract being over the hill, the money thing isn't what it was. in 2018 and 2019. Like,
okay, it's you're not speaking you're speaking rationally to somebody who is like.
Like, we've talked about it before.
I can't even trust rational thinking at this point.
I'm just saying, we talked about it before.
I've been so wounded by this program at this point.
And you've agreed with me that the only logical step, because based on college football logic, which is not logical, but the way college football works, after this season, you have to fire or extend. Mm-hmm. That's how college football works.
Yeah, but what if they come up with the stupid idea of like, we can extend him, but have the money in a better, make a better
That's
financial
not going
way
to happen.
Well, I live in fear that it will because I cannot do that. I can't do another. I can't do it. I don't know that I can do another game at this point. Like it was.
See, the way I look at it is this happened and to the point of. Well, this was it then. This was it. Because I know that we see our Twitter mentions all the time. Any little thing, you can post about anything, and there will be a comment about, yeah, but Clay Helton. Oh, but Clay Helton is this. Oh, I'm rooting for the team to lose, or any of those kind of things. And yet, they're all lies. USC loses and nobody's happy, which is sort of amusing.
No,
right?
but I genuinely
if the outcome is that you want change, then this was the result that you needed to happen. And like I said, it's done. It's done.
It is done. It might be done, but I'd rather it be done than like this because it was done in 2019 and it was done in 20. Literally, Clay Helton walked off the field. In 2018, and everybody thought this is the end for him.
Sure,
that's the end, and it wasn't. So, like, forgive me if I'm a little bit scarred from that. And then we learned about all that kind of stuff. But yeah. Like, okay, so during the game on Slack, there was a discussion. Somebody dropped a GIF of the moment in The Force Awakens, Star Wars. So you won't get what I'm talking about. But in The Force Awakens. There's the moment where...
Is this the one with Spock in it?
Oh, God. Where Kylo Ren is on the catwalk with his father, and they're having this conversation or whatever about how, like and the gif that was dropped into the chat was, like, something like, I want this pain to end.
Is Luke his father?
No. Han Solo is his father. Whatever.
Spoilers!
I'm not... Jesus. Well, you're about to get a bigger spoiler, because guess what? Han Solo dies.
What?!
Kylo Ren needs to kill his father so that he can fully embrace the dark side because love of his father is the thing that's holding him back. And so he tells his father, like, I want this pain to end and I need you to help me. And so, like, there's this moment where they're holding the lightsaber between them. And it's like, you think that he's, Han is going to help bring him back to the light. But really what it is like he's giving him the strength to press the button to ignite the lightsaber, to impale his father and then toss him over the side of the catwalk. And it's like, I was literally living that scene today. I never want to root for USC to lose. I am an eternal optimist. I always enjoy seeing the fight back that USC has shown us over the years. But genuinely, I was sitting there going, I need this pain to end. I need USC to do me a favor, to help me out. And when that pick six happened, it was like the switch of the lightsaber ignited. And suddenly it was like, no, I have accepted that I can kill my father and root for somebody's going to clip that and it's going to be used against me in a court of law. But like, I can root. Actively root for USC to be beaten as badly as possible to ensure the outcome that will help my sanity. And I hate that I have come to that point where during a USC game, my active thought was, God, I hope they don't come back here. God, I hope they don't come back here. It would have been very funny, but also I would have been very angry.
More or less funny than Parker Lewis getting targeted.
Well, okay, that was literally the funniest thing I've ever seen on a football field. Aside from the fact that it's targeting and serious and head trauma and all that kind of stuff, it's no laughing matter. I understand that, folks. But also, USC's kick, that was a sign of the damn times, was it not? Well, it was USC's kicker flies in on the opening kickoff that, by the way, is a way better return than USC should ever be giving up. And it's the kicker who has to make the tackle, and he flies in like a rocket ship and out of the left side of the screen, just poof, all the way through. And then the announcers mentioned, like, was that targeting? And the minute somebody mentioned it, I was just like, well, here we go. USC's kicker is about to get ejected for targeting. That's where this night is going. Strap in, folks, because this is the stupidest bit of USC typicalness I could imagine.
Well, I thought it was a little bit amusing that when I was in the tunnel after the game, going to where the players are and do their media availability, the only player that I was able to get any audio from because of just the way how it worked out was Alex Stadhouse.
Who I had to explain to multiple...
Alex Stadhouse.
Yeah. To the kicker who replaced Parker Lewis.
Yeah.
Who I had to explain to... I watched the game with my mom and dad and my brother. I had to explain to them, like, yeah, that's the backup kicker. Don't worry. He's been USC's kickoff specialist before. Like, he's been around the block. He's not...
I feel like he's been around for like 20 years.
Yeah, he's fine. He'll be fine. Like, you don't want him kicking the 55-yard field goal to win the game the way that you might feel semi-confident throwing right. Parker Lewis out there. But he'll be fine. This won't be a big storyline. And then I had a thought of, like, wouldn't it be funny, extra funny, if, like, it became a storyline that this game came down to
It would have been fascinating. It would have been like the Texas game with Chase McGrath. Remember when
yes.
Chase McGrath missed every kick in the summer? And
then he comes out in the Texas game and wins it takes it to overtime and then wins it at overtime. Yes. Right. Yeah. And that's
It would have been crazy.
The stupidest outcome is the outcome that happened.
If you would have told me going into this game, like, okay, I'm not going to tell you anything about the game. All I'm going to tell you is that the only audio you're going to go home with is from Alex Stadhouse, I would have been like, what the hell happened in this game?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it would have tipped you off that it was a loss because dudes don't like to hang around after losses.
Sure. Yeah.
They like to get away so that they don't have to answer questions from the media. Well, okay. And I don't blame them because what are they supposed to say?
What are you going to say?
What are they supposed to... Well, okay, can we talk
about... There's so many times that you can say it came down to execution.
Yeah. Can we talk about Clay Hilton's presser? Because yes. I saw the tweet come out from USC saying, tune into the presser. And so right. I was like... Huh, I wonder, it's a new year. I wonder what Clay Hilton will say after this ass beating at the Coliseum. And because we haven't heard him have to give an explanation after an ass beating at the Coliseum. Usually it's on the road. So I turn it on and it's literally the same press conference I have heard a million times.
Well, I thought it was interesting though, because it was a little bit different.
Was it though?
Well, let me explain. In the sense that every single question was, you know, the questions that people on Twitter want asked,
the ones that aren't actually going to get an answer because they're the point of them is to ask the question and get that burn in instead of like actually getting an answer from the person you're questioning.
Every single question in the press conference, not worded in the same way Twitter would want you to.
No one asked Clay Hilton why he won't resign.
No, that was not asked. No, but like they were all tough questions, fair but tough questions, right? And every single one of them, none of them were ever going to get answers. And that's not just a Clay Hilton thing. That's most coaches. No one's going to give you the answer to those things in that moment.
Yeah.
Clay Hilton, especially someone who wants to look at the positives and that kind of thing, was never going to give it the answers, which I think is the textbook thing of like how so much of this can be unsatisfying from that perspective. Because those questions need to be asked. They're just never going to be answered. And so it's going to ultimately be you'll feel unfulfilled by those press conferences. One of the questions being, it's year three, you're with a third-year quarterback. Is this what you expected the offense should look like? Which I think is an absolutely fair question, but Clay was never going to answer that. And he didn't. He talked about it in the context of this game, which was like, well, we had to make like 95 yard drives, and if you have to have a 15 play drive, so many plays, you're bound to screw up something. Essentially, was what he was saying, which, like, I get it, but that's not a satisfying answer to the question.
Yeah. Yeah, but there are no satisfying answers to any of these questions. Right. There really isn't, because, quite frankly, Clay Helton obviously doesn't have the answers, because he would have done it.
The
players are there's no point in asking the, what are you going to ask Eric Bryan Jr. why he short-armed that the catch attempt? Like, what is it?
No.
He knows he screwed up. He knows. Like, he doesn't need people to go out there and, like, say,
Drake London wants that pass back.
Yeah. Drake London wants a couple passes back in this game. Yeah. But my thing is, Clay Helton, if he had the answers to any of the questions that were asked of him at any time in a press conference,
this would be a better team.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't need, yeah. 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 This would already be a better team because he clearly doesn't have the answers, and he's clearly in over his head. And we've known this since 2015, but that's,
well, we could have told you that at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is an interesting CarCast in the sense of, like, it is, we're talking about the same exact things we've talked about forever, just in the context of this year, which is really in the context of everything else. I don't want to sound like I did after the Colorado game in 2019, where I said, okay, you just need to, from here on out, need to enjoy all of the moments with the players, and knowing that it's over. Because even though that was a win for SC, and we had that perspective but it's still definitely over. But for real, it's over. I know that the PTSD is there, and all that stuff from the past decisions that have not gone USC's fans' way in terms of making a change is there. But it's over. Like, when everyone in the media is tweeting that you need a change in week two.
Okay, so like that's my point. It's over. If it's over, it's over, and just rip off the damn Band-Aid.
No, I get
that. Don't put us through another Clay Helton coach game. Just don't do it. Mike Bone is not going to earn himself, and Mike Bone is already alienated a chunk of the fan base by keeping Helton to this point. But every week that people have to deal with this is another week that Mike Bone's credibility as athletic director gets eroded. They just need to pull off the Band-Aid, because it's not going to get any better.
I get what you're saying. I don't know that making the decision right now makes anything better in the long term.
Make it worse? Because I think it gets worse in the long term if you continue forward with this farce of a season, then, where Clay Helton gets to say, well, we're still fighting for the Pac-12 South. And it's like, okay, sure you are. And I imagine you could actually win the Pac-12 South. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at this point. I just don't want to see you win the Pac-12 South.
Okay. Pure hypothetical. Who would you rather win the Pac-12 South? Clay Helton as the head coach, still this year, or interim head coach Mike Jinks?
Interim head coach Mike Jinks.
We know what happens at USC when that happens.
No, because if USC does that, I'm out. The podcast is over. I will be done. I'm done.
Okay, I'm just saying, like...
But that's the beauty of installing Mike Jinks as the head coach, because Mike Jinks was an utter failure as a head coach before. So, like, there's no potential.
Alicia, Ed Ogeron was an utter failure before.
Yeah, that's fair, but Ed O had...
And still is, but that's a different story.
Ed O had mystique at USC that Mike Jinks does absolutely not have mystique. So you install Mike Jinks or whoever the hell else you want,
but here,
and then we go through, oh, look, the players rallied, now move on. I mean, but you do realize that USC did not hire Ed Orgeron. So they went out and found
Clay Helton because they felt bad about it.
No, because Pat Hayden's an idiot in the end. But they went out.
It was an overcorrection.
They went out and hired the head coach that they wanted to. Yeah. So why do we think Mike Bone is going to overcorrect the overcorrection?
No, I'm not saying like, he is.
No,
I'm not
I would rather watch Mike Jinks and this team rally around the, you know, the interim bullcrap than I would.
Would it be Jinks? It should be Jinks.
I had this conversation with my brother. I don't think it can be Harrell because he's so young.
I can't see Todd Orlando wanting it.
I don't know what Todd Orlando's ambitions are.
If Todd Orlando wants it, you give it to him.
Yes.
Otherwise, you go Jinks, in my opinion.
And that was my one thought is that Mike Jinks actually has head coaching experience. He would be a very vanilla choice that you just... I mean, Mike Jinks is... This is, oh my God, just Mike Jinks is the Clay Helton option, except Clay Helton, if he had head coaching experience in the past.
So here's
because there's no one else on the staff that I think you can make.
The main reason I said that.
No,
I don't
actually,
know what
no. You know who it is? Sean Snyder. You give it to Sean Snyder.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the tenure. Yeah, I know it's only one more year than Mike Jinks, but I don't know. Anyways.
I think that, okay, hold on. That would be my most, if I wanted to make this season interesting, maybe it's to the benefit of the program that Sean Snyder comes in and is like, oh, I'm totally different. I'm going to be the head coach and we're going to do things however you feel like it.
Here's my thing. And I know that it's easy to say that I am mentally of the mind that this is definitely over, so then don't worry about it. But I think that if you did make that move, and we wake up tomorrow, or today when you're listening to this probably, and that decision has been made, then to me, I don't know how the season gets better. I get the point of like, well, then you don't have the lingering fear that it continues. But then all the narrative just turns down to, yeah, but then you're looking at the interim.
I would much rather deal with that's a BS narrative too. No one's going to look at the interim short of Graham Harrell. I think people are way over Graham Harrell at this point.
We said it about Clay Helton.
No one's going to look at the
I don't think that Bone would make that mistake.
No, but that's my point. I would rather deal with
that
doomsday
scenario.
But it would
be a narrative that exists.
Yeah, but between
and I don't want to deal with
between the two, I would much rather deal with that narrative than a single game more of having to deal with this narrative. I don't want to speak the name of Clay Helton again on this podcast.
It's the narrative we know, though.
No, I hate it. I don't want this narrative. Give me the narrative I don't know.
Fair. Fair.
Just something different. Give me, what is Mike Jinks going to do different? What is Sean Snyder going to do different? Because you know sure as hell Clay Helton's not going to do damn thing different. And he's going
to make corrections and be good at the end of the year. Didn't you listen to the press conference?
Yeah, and I've heard that press conference literally word for word five other times. So I'm very over it. I'm extremely over it.
Can we talk about the game a little bit?
What is there to talk about? The running game was good. My guy Vi was excellent.
I'll talk about the running game because I thought it was...
On a night when your receivers weren't at their best and your quarterback wasn't at your best, why weren't you just riding the running game more? It annoys me about USC.
And then, after the pick six, they really couldn't at that point.
Yeah.
But up until then, they
scored 13 points before the pick six. So it's not like you wasted three quarters or anything.
Yeah. I think they could have run the ball a little bit more, especially when Stanford was dropping eight as much as they did. I thought they still ran the ball very well. What was the sack adjusted rushing yards?
Sack adjusted rushing yards for USC, 185, 5.6 per carry.
5.6?
Yeah.
Okay. Last time I checked, it was like 4 point something. And I remember thinking that like it feels like more than that. And I think that's a true 5.6 too, in the sense that what was the longest run SC had tonight? Like maybe like 14 yards?
Vi had a 20-yarder and Ingram had a 22-yarder. I think both of those were later in the game.
Yeah, I don't remember those.
And there was one early, but...
But either way, they didn't have the 87-yarder that Stanford did.
Either way, it's extremely annoying. Like, USC has good running backs, and I'm extremely annoyed because the thing that I thought was going to be the downfall of this season, the offensive line, they're just fine. In fact, they look like they can run block a hell of a lot better than previous USC offensive line. So, like, yeah. I would have really appreciated... I said this coming out of halftime, like... It would be real nice if
pass
USC
pro's
just
been good too.
Yeah, pass pro's been fine. That's in the first half, the really annoying thing was Keaton Slovis was being given ages to throw and he couldn't find a receiver. And that's either a failure of the receivers not getting separation, Slovis finding the window to throw in, or the scheme not getting guys open. And I think it's probably all of the above, but
right.
But the point is that, like, that I know this is the air raid, but also they try to act like it's not the air raid, so whatever. I found myself the entire time just going like, try running the ball six times in a row. See what Stanford does. Just try it. Just try running the ball six times in a row. Your running backs are in rhythm. Your offensive line is clearly comfortable. Try doing it.
You know what I do if I'm David Shaw? Let him run 30 times in a row. I'm still dropping it.
Yeah. Well, then USC runs 30 times. We don't know what USC would look like because they never try that crap. So
sure.
They come out.
I loved that drive where they ran the ball a million times.
Yeah.
If only because it was, we see Keaton Slovis run the ball four times for 17 yards on that drive. Scrambles, right? He had a couple of scrambles, but he had two designed runs. One of them was a zone read keeper, which I feel like has to be the plan. Like, that's a zone read keeper. I don't know that Keaton Slovis is actually making that read. And secondly, the other one was the sneak under center, right?
Yeah.
But the doing those zone read keepers and the sneak after the scrambles was very amusing to me. Like, just the way it worked out. But yeah, that's how you do it. Like, if you're able to use him with his legs, then it makes the zone read more viable. If you're able to actually run the ball on a consistent basis, it prevents Stanford from dropping eight and clogging all those lanes when you're struggling to separate receivers.
Don't start passing again until they're not dropping eight anymore.
Right, but the problem, and especially, I want to say, was it that? No, one of the drives, they all get confusing for me a little bit in this game. One of the problems is that they were running, this was the drive at the beginning of the third quarter. It looks great. They're moving down the field, they're running the ball when they need to. They were actually... They found open guys for a couple of times in the zone. And then you have the one negative play, which is the fumbled snap. And then that just puts everything down to misery. And I think the problem with USC's offense right now is you cannot withstand a negative play.
Yeah.
Because once you get behind schedule, everything comes down. Like, everything falls apart.
Yeah.
And it goes to the thing of, like, they struggle to make things look easy in the passing game. They struggle to find open receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're doing that, you're making every single thing difficult. And so, yeah, when one negative play happens, it takes away everything. And it takes away your ability to run, because if you have first and 10 in the red zone at like the 13, and then suddenly you have a botched snap or whatever, and you have second and 27, well, now you have to throw the football.
No, but
and
the
you
botched,
can't run the ball.
But the botched
point.
Snap, Keaton Slovis got the ball away. It was second and 10, and they threw a stupid little 1 yard route to Taj Washington or something out on the left, and it got nothing. Like that, and that play was never going to get anything more than nothing. So, like, you would have been better off just handing the ball off to Vi Malapai or Keontae Ingram, who were doing a good job at that point, like, who were effectively running.
Right.
So, and again, it's what even is the point of this USC offense if they're not going to be they're not going to be a good passing team. They're going to be a team that can run the ball, I guess, but doesn't want to actually. So it's again, USC is caught between two minds. They have no identity. And so what is the offense going to be except for guys making plays? And guess what? Today, guys didn't make plays. So USC had 13 points in the meaningful parts of this game.
Right. When you put it that way, it comes down to making the plays, right? Like, that is the most damning thing about this, that SC, for as much talent as they have, they shouldn't have to rely on making those key plays in the key moments.
They should be making the plays
between every one of those key moments.
USC
to not lead to them being a key moment.
Yeah, like USC is the student who doesn't do any of the homework, but then aces the final.
Right.
The problem is if you don't ace the final, you're gonna fail the class. Like when everything comes down to that, the big thing that you pull off.
It's big Michael energy, by the way.
Acing the final after not doing any of the homework or going to class ever. Yeah,
that's me.
Yeah. I don't know.
I started an art project once in design class.
Mm-hmm.
We had the project for 3 weeks. It was a 9 a.m. class. I started the project at 3 a.m.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, I'm a procrastinator too, so I'm not judging, but that gives me anxiety. Not as much anxiety as the possibility of keeping Clay home at this point, but also gives me anxiety.
Anyways, this might be shorter than you wanted it to, but it's 2 a.m.
But there's nothing else to talk. It's 2 a.m. I've been awake since 7 and working the entire time.
The race is in 4 hours.
Yeah. I've got a Liverpool game in the morning, too, that I may very well skip because at some point I'm going to need to sleep and I work tomorrow. Yeah. So that's a whole other thing that's maybe making me cranky. But also, there is literally nothing more to say. We can have a conversation in the main show about the defense. We can have a conversation in the main show about the fact that USC still hasn't had a sack this season, which is mind-blowing.
It's weird because I thought the defensive line was fine tonight.
Yeah.
With the exception of the big 87
yard. We can talk about the big plays that they gave up. We can talk about all sorts of things. Keaton Slovis's performance. We can talk about the implications for the rest of the season, all that kind of stuff. But it all comes down to this season is pointless because the end of the road is here and we can either rip that Band-Aid off and be done with it, or we can continue on a road that we all know is ending and that is meaningless and pointless. So
it is a dead end, bro.
It's literally a dead end. So do we keep walking? Or... because guess what? That dead-end road is up a very steep uphill, so it's not pleasant walking, guys. This is not all downhill from here. It's all uphill from here.
Yeah. Anyways, we've gotten a ton of calls into the rant line, but you are still welcome to call. 213-373-1872 is the phone number. Email address is reignoftroy@fansided.com. Give us your emails, give us your calls, and we'll... talk to you on Monday in the main show.
Tell Michael about how it's very important to you that by Sunday a change is made. Like, just tell Michael that we all agree on this except for the one voice of reason over here who is going to tell us that no, they're not going to fire their head coach in week 2. Well, yeah, I know that, but I want it to happen.
To be fair, I'm not advocating for not firing.
No, I know you're not advocating for not firing him. I'm
not
advocating
for not having a change.
You're just saying you don't see the point of firing him now, where I just need it to happen. And I know it's, and just to be clear, it's not going to happen. No one's going to fire their head coach in week 2. It's just not going to happen.
Right. Last thing, pick to click. Verstappen winning off pole tomorrow? Today.
Yes.
Okay. Is Lewis going to podium?
I think Lewis will get by the McLarens.
Will there be a McLaren on the podium? What's your podium? Just tell me your podium.
Verstappen, Hamilton, and who's up there? Probably Norris.
Danny Rick's 2 and Norris is 3.
Yeah, I can't pin on anyone else that I would actually. I mean, I'd love to say Carlos Sainz, but
Carlos Sainz.
Carlos.
All right, that's it. Verstappen wins from pole. Later, guys. See ya.
See ya.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.